Good morning, Joy Church. Good to see you guys this morning. What an epic movie. We're just going to watch it again, over and over. We are in this series that is Legend of the Giant Slayer. It's all about King David. King David is a person that we see in the Bible, but he's also a historical figure as well. And he was the second king of Israel. And if you're familiar with the story of the Bible, Israel is this nation that is God's holy people. So this starts with Abraham. Abraham is this called out man who God tells him, I'm going to make you the father of this great nation. And that nation ends up years later being Israel. And so these people, the Israelites, they're different than the world around them. The world around them during that time has lots of gods, whereas the Israelites only have one God. They dress differently, they act differently, they have different rules, they have different customs, and so it sets them apart from everyone else around them. And so King David, he is the second king in this nation of Israel. And so we, over the series, we're going to be going through his life. Last week, we talked about the beginning of his life when he is this prince that's in a pasture. He's actually anointed king. He's told you're going to be the future king of Israel, but not yet. And then he has to go back to the pasture of taking care of sheep. And he just has to be faithful in that pasture. And you know, King David is such an interesting character for every single one of us because he has these incredible victories. And that's what we're going to hear about today, an incredible victory that David has. But he also has incredible failures as well. And I don't know about you, but man, when I look at my life, I see a lot of incredible failures. And so King David is someone that we can look at and we can relate to. It's so beautiful because even though he has failures, God still refers to David as a man after his own heart. That David was this man that even when he failed, even when he was doing well, he was after the heart of God. He wanted to know God. And so he's actually famous in the Bible because of that, because he was a man after God's own heart. We can see ourselves in the lives of David, but we can also see a little bit of Jesus when we look at David, when we look at his life. Today we are talking about the giant slayer. And you're probably familiar with this story. It happens in 1 Samuel 17. This is one of probably the most popular stories of the Bible, right? If you grew up in church at all, or if you ever went to one of those buses that they parked at your school and you got to go during, you got to miss class. That's why I always went. I was like, absolutely, I'll pretend I'm a heathen, you know. If it means I get out of science, yes, or whatever class I was going to miss. And you go in that bus and they teach you Bible stories. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, you are younger. They probably don't let children do this anymore. This is one of the most popular stories. It's David and Goliath. And so what's happening in this story is David is still the shepherd boy. He's still the shepherd boy, but the Philistines are Israel's great enemy. And as you read the Bible, during this area of the Bible, you'll see time and time again, it's always the Philistines coming after the Israelites during David's life. And so the Philistines, they're there again. They're at war with the Israelites. And so David's older brothers have gone to the battle. His older brothers are soldiers. But David, they think he probably was around 17 years old at this time. He's still the shepherd. And so these two armies, they're on both like a small ravine, a small kind of valley, but it's very small. It's not like the Willamette Valley, you know, it covers the majority of the state. It's a small little valley, and both armies, one are on one side, one is on the other. And so instead of just having this massive battle, they are actually having a champion. Now, the Philistine's champion happens to be a giant. And we read this story, and you know, you think like of tall people. I grew up with giants. My brother is 6'4". He's 4 years younger than me, and I remember it was about kindergarten when he overtook me in height, and it was gone from there. For a lot of our lives, they would be like, which one of you is the younger one? And I was like, I am so much older than this twerp. He just happens to be tall, right? He's 6'4". He wears a size 15 shoe. I have cousins who are 6'6", 6'8". And so to me, these were like giants, you know? And I remember my mom, my uncle, my mom's brother, they grew up more like in the 50s, and they would have to special order his shoes through catalogs because they couldn't get them anywhere else because he was just so tall and his feet were so large. But this pales in comparison to what Goliath was. Goliath was probably 9 to 10 feet tall. I mean, just absolutely enormous. So imagine you're a soldier, you're here, you're ready for battle, and the opposing side says, hey, we're going to do something a little different. Just send out your best champion to fight our best champion. And whoever wins, then the other side, you're going to be our slaves, right? And you're like, okay, who's our best champion? You know, Matthias, I'm trying to think of a good old name, you know. What's another one? I can't think of one. Thaddeus? Mahakalam, right? Whatever, you're like your best soldier. And you're like, okay, here we go. We got this. And then the soldier they bring out is 10 feet tall. So at this point, you're just like, forget it. I don't know what we're going to do. But we've already agreed that whoever wins, we're going to be slaves. And so this happens for 40 days. 40 days, this Goliath, this champion, comes out. He comes out in the middle of the battlefield. He's mocking them. He's telling them, here's the rules of the battle. Send out your best. I'm going to crush his bones. Like, thanks. You know, cool. Can now you just kill me and leave me, let me be? No, I'm going to crush your bones. Whatever, he's mocking them. And it says that the Israelites are cowering, that they're literally hiding in fear. Can you imagine this every day, waking up and going out there, hearing someone say this to you, you know, it's over for us. 40 days long, this is happening. And David, his dad, Jesse, remember him, he tells David, you know, the teenager, he goes, hey, I want you to bring some cheese and some bread to the boys, or, you know, your brothers at the battlefield and see how it's going. Basically, the dad sends David with a charcuterie board. He's like, I prepared this beautiful board for your brothers. Just bring it on down to the battle and just, you know, find out what's going on. And so that's what brings David to the battle this day. And it's, you know, they've been at this battle for 40 days, but no fighting has happened yet. And David comes to the battle. And while he's there, he hears Goliath. Like every single day, Goliath comes forth and Goliath makes his remarks. And so he hears these remarks and he's hearing it and he's saying, what are you guys doing? Let's fight this guy. And everyone is looking at David like, you're a 17-year-old shepherd. What are you doing? Give us the breadboard, right? Give us the cheese and skedaddle out of here. But David, something is stirring inside of him. He knows this Goliath, he's not just mocking us as people. He's mocking our God. And so something is different inside of David where he says something is happening here and we can fight him. We are more than able. And so even though David is this young boy, even though he's a shepherd, even though he's not one of these soldiers, he goes and he says, send me in. I'll be our champion. I will go in and I will defeat this giant. And he never is like, maybe I'll defeat him. He's the whole time is like, I will defeat the giant. And even the king, King Saul at the time is like, you can't do it. You're too small. I don't even quite understand why King Saul relents. At some point, he's just like, sure, go ahead. And you're like, I can't believe it. Like, it's a little bit embarrassing for the king to be like, yeah, we're going to send in this high school sophomore, you know, this is the best we got or whatever. So I'm not exactly sure why King Saul, I think at that point they just knew we're going to lose. We might as well lose this guy. I don't know. So they go ahead and they let David go to Goliath. And David, they start to try to give him different armor. They start to try to give him different things. And he says, no, I'm going to just use what I know. And so he has a sling. He has his shepherd's staff. He goes and he gets some rocks. And then he goes out and he faces the giant. The giant at first is just mad, right? Because he sees they've sent out this boy. He's not even in the right armor. And he's just like, you guys are making a mockery of me. I already knew I was going to beat you, but now you're just sending in children to fight me. So he's mad and he's defiant. And David, it just gives it right back at him. And David is like, hey, you're messing with the wrong people because you're messing with our God. And so we are going to win. And David even tells him, today I'm going to cut off your head. Now, if you went to Sunday school, they never do that part. It's always like David kills Goliath, end of story. But then if you read it, you're like, oh, there's more things happen. More things happen. So you know why they got rid of it. I ran the kids stuff at Joy Church for the first year or two when we first started the church. And I found this video. We were doing David and Goliath, and I found this video online, YouTube. You know, we did everything for free for our curriculum. And so I found this YouTube video to play for the kids. And it showed David, it was animated, cutting off Goliath's head. And I was like, why don't we just stop the video? before it gets to this part, you know, you're trying to weigh, like, are we going G or PG or PG-13 in our kids' classes? We got kindergartners in here, you know, what should we do? And I don't remember what we did, so if you remember, keep it to yourself. But he goes, and he does this one little sling, shoots that rock. The rock hits Goliath right in the forehead. It knocks Goliath out. He falls to the ground. David takes Goliath's own sword, because remember, he doesn't come out with his battle gear. He takes Goliath's own sword, cuts off his head, and then, you know, I don't know what happened after them. Mayhem, right? The Philistines see this. They see their champion fall, and they begin to just run away. They're running because now they know we're supposed to be slaves to these Israelites. They cannot believe that this boy has defeated their giant. And what do the Israelites do? They've been cowering. They've been hiding for days. But in that moment, when they see David cut off this champion's head, they rise up and it says they chase after those Philistines and run after them. And this incredible battle is won for the people because of what David did. And so we're gonna look just more into this story, look into what David did. And I have four things that we can learn from David's life today. The first one is faithfulness will lead you to destiny-defining moments. Faithfulness will lead you to destiny-defining moments. If you missed last week's sermon, I really encourage you, go back and listen to it because it's all about faithfulness. It's all about being faithful when no one sees you, when no one knows you, when no one recognizes you. And that's what David is doing again. He's not going to go be in a battle. He's not going to go do anything fun. He's literally just the charcuterie board carrier. Right? He's once again being faithful to do what his father has asked him to do. And so he is faithful in that moment. To him, it's an ordinary day. Maybe it's a better day because he got to not be with the sheep, right? So maybe it's a little bit more of a fun day, but he had no idea that this would be a destiny-defining day. And the same for every single one of us. We have no idea what day will be a destiny-defining day. But we're called to be faithful every day. We're called to be faithful every day. Ordinary days turn into destiny-defining days when we will be faithful. I remember when I first went into this internship, I felt like God really told me to do this internship, Bible college thing, and so I decided to do it. It was a 2 to 3 year program, but you know, I did the first year, and honestly, I hated it. I didn't like it, and I didn't want to ever go back. And so during the summer, after that moment, I remember that whole summer, I was praying to God, God, please show me what you want me to do next school year. Because I did not want to go back to that internship. So all summer long, I prayed, God, show me my next step, what you want me to do. Show me, God, reveal to me, let me know, right? And guess what? Crickets. God didn't speak to me. God never told me anything else. And I was so frustrated because I was like, why won't you speak to me, Lord? Why won't you show me what you want me to do? You know what he was showing me? I already told you what to do. You just want me to change the plan. And slowly I realized, I think the silence is telling me something. And so, you know, I went back and I went ahead and I finished the program and I did the right things. And you know what? I never had a Goliath come. I never had that destiny-defining day. But what was God doing? He was teaching me to be faithful to do what he first told me to do. How many things in your life are you praying that God will deliver you out of that are actually your destiny-defining moments? That God is trying to teach you to be faithful in small things, faithful in things that he's told you to do because he's bringing you to a place, and yet we're begging God to deliver us from them. And yet every day we're saying, God, if you would take this from me, if you would get me out of this, if you would remove these things, and God is saying, I'm actually trying to teach you to be faithful. I'm actually trying to lead you into an incredible moment where I can be glorified. Faithfulness will lead us to destiny-defining moments. Number two, what voice defines you? David had all of these voices in his ear when he first gets to the battlefield and he hears Goliath comes out and he hears Goliath. So then he starts walking around and he's asking questions. What's going on? What's this guy saying? What are we going to do? What's the battle plan, right? Because he is like ready to go. He's like, oh, this is their champion. Let's go. What's our battle plan? And all of the soldiers around him are like, our battle plan is hiding is being a coward. We're scared of him. Have you seen him, right? But in the moment, David's brother, he actually hears David going around asking all these questions, stirring up what's going on. And so his brother comes and confronts him in verse 28. It says, "Now Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he, David, spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David." This is a sibling rivalry to like its best. "And he said, 'Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?'" What's he saying? "You're not even taking care of your sheep. Why are you here? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. You're just here to see what's going on." And David said, "What have I done now?" This is like classic youngest child, right? "What have I done now?" To the older siblings trying to parent their younger sibling. That's a constant conversation in our home. Who is their parent? Did you birth this child? Okay, how about you let us parent them? How about you let us take care of it? And then the oldest children are like, "But they never do. They never take care of it." But Eliab here, he's questioning David. He's questioning his motives. In that moment, David could have listened to those voices. He could have said, "Yeah, you know what? It's not my place. I'm not a soldier. Yeah, I got to get out of here. Yeah, you know what? My heart probably is full of evil. Yeah, my heart probably is full of this deceit. Yeah, who am I to do this?" Or he could have got really offended and been like, "Yeah, Eliab, he doesn't know what he's talking about. My brother, he's always been on my case." What voices do you listen to in your life? Because there's voices all around you telling you what you should do and how you should live your life. The second voice that David hears during this time is in verse 33. This is actually the king of Israel at the time. And David has already been anointed king of Israel for the future, right? So this is kind of an awkward moment. And yet this is what King Saul says to David. He says, "You are not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him. You are but a youth, and he has been a man of war since his youth." This is like a voice of fear coming against David, saying, "You're just a boy. Who are you? Who told you you could do anything?" David could have stopped in his tracks listening to this. This is a well-meaning voice. This is the king of Israel. And yet David doesn't listen to King Saul. What voice was defining David? If we turn in our Bibles to Psalm 19, you know, King David, there's a lot of the Bible is his story. But then also Psalms is this book in the Bible of just songs and poems that are written to the Lord, that are written about the Lord. And over half of these psalms are attributed to David, that David wrote over half of these beautiful songs. So not only is he this champion, this king, but he's also this poet, this musician. And this psalm, Psalm 19, they believe that David would have wrote when he was a shepherd. So he would have wrote this when he was in the pasture. And it says, starting in verse 7, "The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The rules of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Declare me innocent from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." This is such a beautiful passage. David is pouring out his heart, telling God how good he is, saying, "God, your words are so good. They're so true. They train me. They're better than honey. They're better than gold. Knowing you is better than gold. Knowing you is better than honey." You guys, to us, honey isn't that great because we have corn syrup, right? And because we have white refined sugar and because we have Doritos. But back then, if you think about what they were eating, honey would be such an incredible treat. Honey would be like the ultimate thing for sweetness, the ultimate thing. And he's saying, "God, who you are is even better than honey itself." This is such an incredible passage for us to look at because David, when he's a shepherd, is really knowing who God is. He's taking that time as a shepherd to really get to know who God is, really get to know what his word is. Really, he's saying to God, God, you're so good. Hey, keep my heart from presumptuous sins. God, let my heart be clean before you. God, let my way be right before you. He's digging in and he's doing deep work to know who God is. And because David knows who God is, it means David knows who he is. The more I get to know God, the better I will know myself. And so it doesn't exactly make sense. And we think, no, I need to do all of these, read all of these books and listen to all these podcasts and get all this advice because I just need to get to know myself. You know, the way that you really, truly get to know who you are is get to know who God is. Because God created you in his image. So the more that I know him, the more I know who I am made to be. The more I know him, the more I get to understand who I was formed on this earth to be. And that's what was going on with David, is the more that he got to know God, the more he knew, oh, I know who I am. I know what I am. My brother can come and say that I'm just sinful. My brother can come and say and question all of my motives, but I know who I am because God is the one who will tell me who I am. King Saul can come and say, you're too young, you're too weak, you won't be able to do it. It doesn't matter what the voices around you say if you know what your voice, the voice of God is saying to you. The more you get to know God, the better you will know yourself. In verse 23, it says that David heard something different. You know, Goliath is coming and he's saying the same thing every day. And yet David, when he hears what Goliath says, it's very different than what everyone else around him heard what Goliath said. In verse 23, back in 1 Samuel 17, it says, let me find it for you guys. As he talked with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. He heard something different than everybody else was hearing. We have some friends who lived in Louisiana during Hurricane Katrina, and they knew that this hurricane was bad, that the, it's called levees, right? We're going to break. And so the dad of the family, he was getting his kids. They have four children, and he was getting them, and they're packing up their stuff, and they're trying to get out of the city. And everyone is trying to get out of this city. And they've just made it through the crowds, through the people, and they have the radio on, and they're trying to get out of the city. They're listening to the news on the radio, and the radio is talking about all the people that are still in the city and all the destruction and devastation that's about to happen to them. And he, you know, as the dad, as the man, he's just rejoicing. We got out. We did it. I got my family out. We're getting out of here. We're safe. And he turns and his wife says to him, all those people, listen, all those people. And her heart began to break. And he said in that moment, he realized she's hearing something different than what I am hearing. And that's what was happening to David in that moment, that all the soldiers, they're just hearing defeat. They're hearing how they're going to be slaves. They're hearing about their terrible future ahead of them. But David is hearing something different when Goliath is speaking. He's not hearing the same thing that everyone else is saying. A giant in your life is anything in front of you that is opposing God. A giant in your life is anything in front of you that is opposing God. And that's what Goliath is doing. He's saying, I defy your God. He's saying, you guys don't even have the right God. Your gods can't save you. And David is saying, excuse me? I know my God. So he's hearing something very different than everybody else is hearing. In 2 Corinthians 10:5, it says, we demolish anything that sets itself up against God. This is what Paul is saying to the Corinthian church thousands of years later. He's saying, we demolish anything that sets itself up against God. And that's what David was hearing in this moment, is this giant, this champion is setting itself up against my God. And I will demolish anything that sets itself up against my God. What voice defines you? What voice in your life defines your life? What voice in your life is defining your decisions? What voice are you listening to? Because the voice of God says, we demolish anything that sets itself up against him. What giants are in your life right now that are set up, that are against God? In verse 29, this is when the brother, remember, is coming to David and he's saying his things. In the New King James, David answers, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause? Is there not a cause?" He's saying, look at what this giant is saying. Is there not a cause for us to go after? Is there not a giant standing in front of us to defeat? Is there not a reason that we need to stand that's bigger than just us being afraid for our own lives? What's at stake in your life if you do not defeat the giants ahead of you? What's at stake in your family's life if you won't face down the giants that are standing up in front of you? Number three, if God is for you, then giants must fall. If God is for you, then giants must fall. In verses 45 through 47, it says, "Then David came to the Philistine, and he said to him, 'You come with me with a sword and a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down, and I will cut off your head.'" Like, that is just so bold, you know? I'd be like, "I'm going to do my best. This day I'm going to try my hardest," right? "This day, we'll see." No, David is like, this is what's going to happen to you, Goliath. And think about this. This guy is probably in the 5-foot range because at this time, people were shorter. So David is not in the 6-foot range. That means this giant is over twice his height. This is like a toddler squaring off to their parent, correct? And yet he's saying, this is what's going to happen to you. "And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and then all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all of this assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hands." David is full of confidence that is there not a cause, that if there is a giant ahead of me that is against the God that I serve, then that giant must fall. In every single one of our lives, there are giants that are ahead of us. And maybe the giants in your life are personal. Maybe they're personal giants. They're personal things in your life, like addiction, anything that comes against what God says. Maybe they're lies. Maybe there are, you know, are problems, financial problems that are ahead of you. Maybe there are health diagnoses that are ahead of you. Whatever it is in your life that is coming and saying, "I'm defying the word of the Lord in your life," that's a giant in your life that you have to stand up to like David and say, it's time this giant fell. This giant isn't just coming after me. This giant is defying my God. This giant is coming against everything that God says that I am. And because of that, this giant must fall. There's a study that just came out that said that for kids to follow Jesus. So if you have little kids and you're like, "Oh, I hope that they're going to be Christians." This said 100%. So this is crazy, right? Full amount, 100%. That's the whole pie, okay? 100% of kids will follow Jesus if their dad does. Isn't that wild? 100%? That's really good odds. So dads, listen to that. That if you sit and you think, "Oh man, I don't know, that's heavy. It's all on me." No, your children aren't looking for a perfect dad. The children are looking for a dad that wakes up every morning and says, "I will slay every giant that is ahead of me. I will slay everything that comes against God that is ahead of me. I will stand up and I will slay those things that are ahead of me." Not so that my kids can see a perfect dad, so they can see, hey, dad struggles, but his God is bigger than any other thing. His God is bigger than any other giant. And that's the number one thing that will cause your kids to serve the Lord. And maybe you're in here and you say, "But there is no dad." Guess what, mom? I'm not discouraged, because the same thing, if I wake up every morning and I say, no giant is going to stand against my God. No giant is going to come and act like it's allowed to live here. I'm going to face the personal giants that I have to face every single morning so that my kids know there is a God. So my kids know that they were created by him. So my kids know that no giant can stand. That if there is a giant, the giant must fall. We have personal giants, but we also have cultural giants. There's cultural giants around us that must fall. You know, there was in the 1800s, this boy named William. And William, he was living wildly in his youth. He wasn't a Christian, and he went into Parliament. So this is in the UK. He went into Parliament as soon as he was old enough. So I think he was 21. He was already in Parliament. And he had this life of a politician. Well, he makes friends with these two men. One's with the last name Pitt, and he moves on to be the prime minister. And the other man is this man named John Newton. And John Newton, if you're familiar with him, he's actually the man who wrote Amazing Grace. If you know that song, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. And John Newton was a former slave trader on a slave trading boat, and he miraculously found the Lord. And so that's really his cry, that he's praying to the Lord. He's saying, grace that saved me, the horrible things that I've done, and yet God's grace is so amazing, it could save someone like me. And so William, he meets these men, and he's 25 years old, and they lead William to Jesus. And so William becomes a Christian, and here he is in Parliament. He's working in government. And so he thinks, you know, I wonder if I should quit. Should I quit being in government, you know, and I'll just be a Christian now, full time, you know, not a job, but, you know, he's thinking maybe I won't be in government anymore. And they actually tell him this quote. If you can put my first quote up onto the screen for me, they say, "Surely the principles as well as the practice of Christianity are simple and lead not to meditation only, but to action." What are they saying to him? They're saying, surely being a Christian means it will move you to action. You don't need to just go and now just meditate and think about the Lord and think about his word. No, surely being a Christian will move you into action. And so that's what William does. He stays in Parliament and he begins to look, okay, God, why am I here? Why have you placed me here? What do you want me to do? And you know the giant that was there in his lifetime was slavery. And so William Wilberforce began to actively go against slave trade. And so he brought up the bill to abolish the slave trade. For the first time, he brought it up in 1793. And it just failed miserably. Because this was the giant that was so interwoven into their culture. It was interwoven in their economics. It was interwoven into their socioeconomic classes. And so it was this big giant. And it failed miserably. But William didn't care because he knew this is the giant in my lifetime. Is there not a cause? And so every year he fought, he kept bringing up the bill to the point where he was publicly slandered, where they would ridicule him. They said horrible things about him. He even was publicly beaten, but every year without fail, he would bring up this bill, and every year it would get voted back down until in 1807, he brings up the bill again, and this time everyone's debating it. This time everyone's talking about it. And then one of the senators, he says this about Wilberforce. Will you put up that next quote for me? He says, Napoleon would come home. You guys know who Napoleon is, right? You guys, okay. Napoleon would come home in power and pomp, yet tormented by the bloodshed and oppression of war he had caused. Wilberforce would come home to the bosom of his happy and delighted family, able to lie down in peace because he had preserved so many millions of his fellow creatures. And that day, they voted to abolish the slave trade. And immediately after that, William goes and he begins to lobby other governments, trying to get them to do the same thing in their countries. And then over the next 25 years, he's trying to abolish slavery all the way. He keeps fighting because he's saying, is there not a cause? This is the giant that is here in my generation. This is the giant that needs to be slain. Is there not a cause? 3 days before he dies, they abolish slavery in the UK. What an incredible story of someone who said, God, if you can use anything, you can use me. God, what are the giants you want me to slay in my generation? We have to slay the personal giants in our life so that we can begin to slay the cultural giants in our time. So we can begin like William and leave a legacy for years to come. Number four, as we get ready to close here, is be a momentum changer. Be a momentum changer. 40 days the Israelites were hiding. 40 days they were cowering. 40 days they were weeping about the slavery future that they were going to have. And yet David, one day, standing up to a giant, changed everything. In verse 52, It says, and the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron. This completely changed everything, that they rose up and they chased after those Philistines. David, one person standing up for Jesus, will change everything. In Acts 17:6, this is the disciples after Jesus has died. He's rose again. He sent them out. And now they're spreading this message of Jesus, this message of the good news everywhere that they're going. And in Acts 17, it says they could not find them. They're looking for these disciples. They can't find them. So they dragged out Jason and some more of the Christian brothers before the city's authorities, shouting, these men who have turned the world upside down have come here also. That's incredible. Now, this isn't a good story. They were, like, taking them out to hurt them. But this is an incredible story, that it was a momentum shift, that Jesus changed the momentum of what was happening during that time. And then now these men are going forth, and they're proclaiming Jesus, and literally cities are saying, the whole world is being turned upside down from these Christians. The whole world is being turned on its axis. They're changing everything. Why? Because they're standing up in their culture, and they're saying, there is a God. And this giant that everyone is cowering to needs to fall. This giant that is standing in front of you in your life, it needs to come down. This giant that is defying your God and what God says about you and who God says you are has to come down in your life. And maybe you're here this morning and you've struggled with addiction in your life. Or maybe you're here and you've struggled with just brokenness in your life. Maybe you're here and you've struggled in your mental health for your whole life. Maybe you're here and you have one of those terrible health diagnoses ahead of you. Maybe you're here and you've struggled in your family. It's just broken. It's broken. It's broken. One person standing up will change everything. That when you choose to stand up and say, no, the God who is in me is bigger than this Goliath who is before me. I will stand up for truth. I will stand up for what is right. I will say, nope, you might say this is my future. You might say this is my family's future. You might say this is in the cards for me, but I say, no, God's word is stronger. God's word is better, and that giant must fall. That giant must fall in my life. What had captivated these disciples so much that they would literally be dragged into the streets? What had captivated them so much that town after town, people would say, oh no, those people who have turned the world upside down are here now too. It was Jesus. Jesus had so captivated, had so transformed their life that they said, I can't stop talking about him. I can't stop telling people about him. I can't stop standing up for him. And that's what we, every Christ follower, every Christian in this room, that's what we say, is that we've seen Jesus. And we say, I can't live the same way that I lived before. I don't want to live the same way that I lived before. Once I saw him, I knew my whole life needed to change. Once I saw God, I knew, hey, nothing else in this world will ever compare to who he is. And if you're in this room and you don't know Jesus, we want you to meet him this morning. We want you to know him. Because you weren't created as an accident. You weren't just something that has evolved over time. No, you were created by the creator of the universe, who not only just created nature and so you were formed. No, it says in the Bible that he formed you individually, that he knows you individually. And the more I get to know him, the more I get to know me. The more I get to know him, the more incredible that he is. And so what we do when we say, I'm a Christ follower, I'm a Christian, what we're saying is, hey, I'm giving up my old life. I'm giving up all the old ways that I used to live. I'm turning. I'm saying, God, I've done things wrong. I've made mistakes, but I realize there is only forgiveness in you. There is only redemption in you. There is only salvation in you. That's what John Newton was saying when he said, amazing grace, how sweet the sound. And it has saved a wretch like me. I once was lost. But now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. And that's what Jesus is offering every single one of us in this room today, that he would save us, the wretches, that we would not be lost anymore, that we would not be blind anymore. If everyone would just bow your heads and close your eyes, if you're in this room and you say, I'm ready to follow Jesus. I'm ready to stop living for myself. I'm ready to give my life over to Jesus. Would you lift up your hand for me? There's no one looking around. We're not trying to embarrass you. We're just giving you a way to say, Jesus, it's my time. Thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone who has their hands up. Anyone else? Thank you. Thank you. Right now, we're going to say a prayer. And it's not about saying the right words or the perfect words. It's just a way for you to say, Jesus, I'm putting my faith in you. Jesus, I'm not going to live for myself anymore. Jesus, I'm recognizing you're the only one who can save me. So right now, if everyone in the room, if you would just repeat after me as I pray this. Dear Jesus, thank you for saving me. God, I recognize that you are Lord. And God, I give you my life. God, forgive me of my sins. Help me be like you. I'm turning my life over to you. I'm going to follow you. I put my faith and trust in you. In Jesus' name, amen.